This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
It's Friday. That means time for your view from the C-suite in partnership with Altron here on Classic Business, bringing you closer to the business leaders around the boardroom table. And it's a series where the interview rules are really made up and market caps certainly don't matter. Today's view has got a definite Black Friday, Cyber Monday, e-tailing security theme to it. And just looking at some of the numbers today, Superblist.com is said to have its biggest Black Friday to date. By 7 o'clock this morning, it had received nearly 20,000 orders, and obviously those have rolled in throughout the day. And in digging up the numbers for this interview, I found that online spending in South Africa has more than tripled over the last 5 years, from 5.7 billion rand in 2013 to an estimated 18.1 billion last year, according to the South African Council of Shopping Centres and market research group Urban Studies. That said though, Urban Studies reveals that the adoption of e-commerce in the country still lags way behind that of overseas markets. Take this for example. Online spending contributes roughly 1.8% of retail sales of just more than 1 trillion, and that's compared to 19% in Britain, 17% in Germany, and only 10% in the US. I was surprised by that number. So anyway, we can continue expected runaway growth, shall we call it, but with that, increased cyber crime and cyber risks. Last year, more than 100,000 fake shopping sites were set up over the Black Friday period, and my next guest is certainly no stranger to the world of cybercrime and how to deal with cyber threats. Paul Stafford, he's the recently appointed Vice President for Africa at NASDAQ-listed Mimecast. Evening, Paul.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. A little Black Friday out, I'm not going to lie, but clearly we've taken to this American holiday with great gusto. Now, as Mimecast's newly appointed Vice President for Africa, you've certainly taken over as the captain of a ship that's sailing along fairly smoothly, despite the turbulent waters of modern cybersecurity. Let's dial it right back, though. You studied a BCom Accounts and IS at UCT. You started out your career at Citi. You've had stints with Dai Data and Vodacom before joining Mimecast. So you've really gathered a broad ICT experience along the way. Did you play lots of computer games as a child? How did you get involved initially in this love of tech?
No, yeah, thanks very much, and thanks for having me on the show. In some ways, it was probably a somewhat of an accident that I landed up in IT. I actually grew up spending most of my time in the ocean, so I grew up in Cape Town. So I'm a real water boy. And in fact, the pivot into real IT from my Varsity days, which was kind of balanced across business, accounting, and IT, came when I went to London. I guess in those days, there were a lot of folk who finished university and went across to London for some work experience. And I think that IT in the kind of mid-90s was exploding, and it was a real land of opportunity moving very, very quickly. And that's where I really got my teeth into it, rather than early as a young kid playing computer games, as you suggested.
That is an interesting pivot into it. And obviously, London in the 90s, just ahead of the dot-com boom-bust bubble. Did you experience that firsthand? And how, perhaps, did that shape your future approach to the industry?
That's a great question, and probably a little bit of a sore point for me. So one of my greatest learnings was, in those times, there was a huge number of IPO tech businesses. And I left on a holiday with a trading account where I was, I guess, somewhat convinced that I understood what I was doing on the trading of these IPOs. And I went on to a surf trip in Indonesia. And when I got off the boat, the collapse had happened. And of course, in those days, when everyone thought everything was only going up, you had no concept of putting intelligent decision-making around some of these investments, stop orders and the like. And I most certainly learned a very hard lesson when I got off the boat, got back to the internet and realized that a lot of that building that I'd done over that time period had disappeared. So yes, that remains very securely stuck in the back of my head. And well, maybe as you talk about it, it brings back some of the foundations for the way we think today.
Yeah, and I mean, as a surfer, you'll understand that it doesn't take too many big waves to bail off in order to learn those lessons quite quickly. Mm-hmm. If you talk about the foundations for the way things we do things today, how do you think that time has influenced that practice today?
I think what we've seen over the last kind of 10 years specifically is a very, very fast acceleration of how things work, both from a tech point of view, a workflow point of view, and really how business is pivoting. And as you say, you know, I'm also quite surprised by the numbers and the uptake in online purchasing in the US. Europe seems to be way ahead of that, and South Africa has a huge opportunity to accelerate further. But I think what we've seen as that world has changed is a quite aggressive catch-up of the policies and rules around these things starting to be formalized, written to law. And then, of course, they've got to go through the courts to actually be shaped up and become worked around. So we've seen all that stuff starting to happen. It obviously happens really on two legs, one on the corporate side and the other on consumer protection side. And I think that that has matured a hell of a lot over the last few years. There's still a lot of space to fill. And it's a tough set of requirements to meet because, as you know, technology is changing so quickly.
You talk about personal data and how regulation is trying to keep up. I recently finished watching The Great Hack, and it's just a remarkable documentary of that space and how things like Cambridge Analytica really highlighted the problems and brought it into focus and into the public's mind's eye and attention. I'm sure you keep an eye on the horizon for emerging opportunities in this space and in your industry. How much of this idea of a digital identity is the big one on the horizon, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've touched on a great opportunity. So the opportunity to leverage technology to really tie down very, very secure frameworks for digital identity that are very, very difficult to break is a great opportunity. You know, I think things like you choosing your own set of biometric foundations or building blocks that suit you is one of those things. So, for example, you could build your own digital identity by leveraging your fingerprint, your eye scan, your ID number, your own password. So the more of these kind of vectors that you build around a digital identity, the stronger it becomes. And I do think that digital identity providers that innovate that space and make it easier for us to have a single identity that's leveraged across multiple services is going to make the consumer's experience a lot easier. And I do think there's a great opportunity, and most certainly there are some vendors playing in that space that are quite innovative that are taking up this opportunity.
I was amazed by my partner unwrapping a new iPhone 11 with the way that digital identity has evolved. It's no longer just a biometric thumbprint or a retina scan. It's now a full facial scan that you've got to do before you set the device up. We're seeing these moves forward. I don't know whether or not you would describe them necessarily as leaps forward, though. As an executive has obviously got to balance this role between the need for constant improvement and evolution and being open to rapid disruptive change. How do you balance the two?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that the challenge is that businesses need to service their customers and balance ease of process, you know, ease of experience, so that people don't fall off any of the workflow processes that you're in because they just become too hard, which is very much at the front end of the business, with the back end challenges of how to manage the ever evolving policy frameworks, threats. And that landscape is obviously evolving as quickly and in many cases more quickly than the ability to defend against it. And that's why we land up with all of this opportunity.
When you look at our resilience, our readiness in South Africa to combat some of the threats, and we were chatting yesterday about card fraud, we're chatting about how POS systems are being attacked, so retailers are under threat, consumers are under threat, and we just see cyber risks and cyber security. I think Warren Buffett was the one who called it out in his letter to investors last year as the biggest threat that he sees in the world, even more of a threat than nuclear missiles being fired in North Korea. I mean, that sounds fairly hyperbolic, but if you look around, we're open almost everywhere to attacks. How does Mimecast approach this? How are you trying to build more resilience into your clients' security?
So I think, you know, we really see that problem from a couple of points of view. The first is, I think that the threat landscape is becoming more and more targeted. So what does that mean? If you look back in time, you know, people got spammed and there were these viruses that were written, but they tended to be written to be kind of sprayed across the market and see what stuck. And they were reasonably effective, but I think over time, technology and the end user has started to recognize those kinds of untargeted threat vector attacks and built up a reasonable amount of muscle memory against those. And the technologies have been quite good at stopping those in their tracks. What we've seen in terms of how we gather threat intelligence across, you know, many, many millions of users across the globe is that these threats are becoming more and more targeted. So what does that mean? You've got to picture people writing a very specific attack for a very specific purpose at a very specific time, more than likely to a very specific, small, targeted audience. And I've always said to people, you know, the days of old, it was, you know, probably some people in a dorm room getting together to be irritating and disruptive. But now this is very much an industry, and it's an industry that is known to fund very, very large initiatives because it's very, very successful. And of course, it continues to fund itself. So you've got to picture a business with people sitting in rows of desks with targets to make, et cetera, et cetera. What we see in these targeted attacks is people are leveraging both technology, human behavior, timing events, etc. And I think humans are comfortable to pick up one isolated piece of information that they don't understand and target against it. But when it's a combination of things that appear to make sense to them, two or three things that appear to make sense to them, it's a known kind of behavioral science that people's guard drops very, very quickly. And then, of course, with the frenzy around trying to get the Black Friday deal, you know, that brings in a lack of defense just in itself because there's a time pressure to get the deal before someone else does. So I think what we're seeing is very much more targeted attacks that leverage both technology vulnerabilities, but also human vulnerabilities. And we are looking as an organization to build defenses against both of those. So companies are building sets of technologies, leveraging some of our technologies and others to control their back-end systems. But then very importantly, we also providing companies with fun ways of capturing time with people to improve their understandings of how these things work, what to click on, what not to click on, what to look out for, what good practice looks like as a user of technology. And that we call awareness training. So it's building up what we refer to as the human firewall. Firewalls in technology are special pieces of technology that look at information and try and stop things that are bad. And of course, humans need to build up their own human firewalls to be aware of these situations, not clicking on bad links.
Yeah,
not forwarding things that they shouldn't, et cetera, et cetera.
Helping people practice safe clicks there while they're behind their computer screens at the office or at home or at, you know, on a public Wi-Fi network. Zooming out now and just looking at Mimecast as an organization, it's only 16 years old, which I suppose in tech years is about 50. It listed on the NASDAQ back in 2015. It's been named a best workplace to give back by Good Company in recognition of being a really interesting corporate citizen. What's the culture like inside an organization such as this? How have you found it, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And culture is such a difficult thing to really get your finger on. You know, I think that one of the things that we're most proud of as Mimecast specifically in South Africa is that our founders were South Africans, a gentleman from Cape Town and a gentleman from Johannesburg. And in fact, one of the pressures that I most certainly feel is that when foreigners from the Mimecast business come and visit us, they talk about the South African business as being kind of the cultural home of this organization. And that's a real honor and also a real pressure to protect. But I think what we've done as a kind of 100, 150-person organization in South Africa, which is quite a nice size, you know, when you get too big, it becomes more difficult, is we've really worked hard to protect that kind of family style feeling around our culture. So, you know, our people work hard to look after each other. We speak a lot about putting teammates first. I think that is the fundamental kind of building block of why people enjoy working at Mimecast. We invest well in our people. We've just opened a really amazing new facility, a new office in Sandton, in a block called Sandton Gates. And that's been designed with a large number of factors that put our staff first. Great collaboration spaces, you know, from every desk you can see natural light and you can see the horizon. Of course, the horizon in Johannesburg is very, very green, which is great. So we've worked hard there. You know, we want that working office space to be a more of a working destination rather than just an office space. And we've been in there a week, and it's really energized people, and we're already seeing more natural collaboration between people in this office, which is a single floor plate, rather than the older office, which had us walking up and down stairs between, you know, numerous floors, etc. Yeah, so that's been great for us.
What do you think it is, Paul, about the culture in South Africa and in Cape Town in particular? If you look at Amazon Web Services, a couple of South Africans are critically involved in that, and it's now a global gorilla. Obviously, Peter Bauer and Neil Murray that you just referenced. We tend to punch above our weight when we talk about ICT. If you look at the way Dai Data has performed internationally as well, what is it about the culture now, broadly speaking, of South African entrepreneurs in the ICT sector that leads us to excel on the global stage?
Yeah, I mean, I think a great question, and again, one that's quite difficult to answer. My impression of all my time overseas, and I've been lucky enough to work in a couple of countries overseas, that the South African working culture is highly sought after. And I think, you know, South Africa is a place where people are comfortable to get their heads down and to take risks and to work hard to push ideas and goals forward. And I think IT is one of those industries that rewards innovative, probably somewhat out-of-the-box thinking. And I think that we're seeing a lot of entrepreneurial growth, specifically in the ITC sector, and more specifically out of the Cape Town region, which is great. I love the Amazon story, and I love the South African influence on the Amazon story and how that's turned out in Cape Town specifically, with a very large footprint for Amazon. And that's most certainly inspirational for us. We are looking to, in some way, follow in their footsteps and are looking to grow out providing support and technical services from our South African business to help service the rest of our global customers. And that's a great opportunity for South Africa and, of course, for us, specifically in an industry vertical that has a huge resource shortage globally.
Yeah.
And we believe that South Africans are quite well suited to cybersecurity support, because I think security as a general topic is high on the mind of all South Africans. And we think in a very complete way around security from a very, very young age.
Personally, Paul, would you consider your leadership style more of one of being a hunter or a gatherer?
Great question. I think I'm very much a people-first person. So I've been referred to a couple of times, and I'm working on it as a reluctant leader, which is a real interesting tag. But I'm a very strong people person. I think that's where my leadership opportunity has come from. Make no bones, when you are a leader in a region connected to a NASDAQ-listed company, there are very strong drivers around how the business needs to perform. So that is balanced in terms of my approach. But I work very hard on our people, and I get the most satisfaction working on our people. And I think one of the things that's really inspired my leadership and a career pivot towards more complete leadership is watching things like our graduate placement program. You know, people that have had real challenges in terms of background and built amazing personal resilience, grabbing the opportunity to come and work for an organization like Mimecast and really burying themselves in the learning. And it's just such an amazingly satisfying thing to watch those people grow. And then in a business that's growing, be able to offer them permanent employment. And I think those are one of the really true gifts that I and my position get to see play out. And that's a great story, obviously, for us. And it's a great story in the context of South Africa, too.
Yeah, and I think you are part of a great story that is inspiring, hopefully, the next layer of and the next generation of startups and business leaders to go on and try and summit the global ICT mountain. Paul, with that and mountains, we're going to have to leave it there, chatting to you from your base in Cape Town. Great pleasure sharing your insights into Mimecast and the cybersecurity lay of the land here in South Africa.
Thanks very much, and thanks very much to your listeners for listening, and I hope all those Black Friday deals get delivered on time. Have a great evening.
Paul Stafford, newly appointed Vice President for Africa at Mimecast, sharing his gnarly view from the C-suite. That was brought to you by Altron Technology Partners in your digital transformation journey. For more information, visit them at altron.com. Altron, there when it matters.